is Conversations on Healthcare. I'm Mark Maselli.
And I'm Margaret Flinter.
Margaret, we've been keeping a close eye on health reform implementation at both the state and federal level most of the year, as well as the political debate around healthcare reform. But it's been a while since we checked in on the progress the country and private practices are making in converting to electronic medical records. We introduced the term meaningful use to our listeners. Margaret, what are you hearing about the transformations that are going on in this area?
Well, my overall assessment is that the adoption of electronic health records, as complicated as we once thought that was, is a lot easier than the adoption of some of healthcare reform. I think it's going pretty well, and I think that in July, when the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services began to make some minor tweaks to their rules about meaningful use, everybody really got on board. Remember, meaningful use are really measures for providers to show that they're using electronic health records, not just to keep information electronically that they used to keep in a chart, but to communicate with everybody else involved in healthcare so we can improve outcomes for patients. And, you know, there's been a survey I saw recently of IT executives to show the majority of the people who actually create and sell the electronic health records are going to be ready to meet those meaningful use rules in the next year. But the majority of practices are saying they probably won't be ready till 2012.
I think they're worried about the value it will add to its patients, but I think in the long run, it will be something that will improve outcomes. The President's Council of Advisors on Science and Technology also just released a report urging the federal government to be more aggressive in pushing electronic health records. The goal is to have electronic medical records available for each and every American by 2014.
Well, that's great. And of course, we hope that every American will have access to healthcare by 2014 as well.
We do.
And I am confident that David Blumenthal, the National Coordinator for Health IT, will be successful in implementing these recommendations, certainly as quickly and efficiently as possible. He put it pretty simply recently when he said that council members were essentially telling the ONC, congratulations on what you've done, but you've got a whole lot more to do. And he drew the metaphor of a mountain climber who scales one peak only to find there are many more ahead before he reaches the summit.
You know, he's very insightful, and it's probably time we invite Dr. Blumenthal back on our show and give us more of an update.
I think so. And speaking of guests, let's turn today to Maureen Bisignano, the new president for the Institute of Healthcare Improvement. She is here with us today, and we look forward to speaking with her about the new goals for IHI going forward, as well as about the many projects and initiatives that IHI is leading to improve patient healthcare around the world.
But no matter what the story, you can hear all of our shows on our website, chcradio.com. You can subscribe to iTunes to get our show regularly downloaded. Or if you'd like to hang on to our every word and read a transcript of one of our shows, come visit us at chcradio.com. You can become a fan of Conversations on Healthcare on Facebook, and also follow us on Twitter.
And as always, if you have feedback, email us at chcradio.com. We'd love to hear from you. Now, before we speak with Maureen Bisignano, let's check in with our producer, Lauren Bonner, with the headline news. And we'll also be hearing from some of our past guests who've joined us this year. They'll be giving us their healthcare reading recommendations just in time for the holidays.
Look forward to hearing them.
I'm Lauren Bonner with this week's headline news. The Obama administration announced new insurance rate review rules that it says will bring transparency and oversight to insurance premiums and help rein in the kind of excessive and unreasonable rate increases that have made insurance unaffordable for so many families. The Department of Health says it would require health insurance companies to disclose and justify any increases of 10% or more in the premiums they charge next year. Jay Angoff is the director of the Office of Consumer Information and Insurance Oversight for HHS.
I don't want to either overstate, though, or understate the significance of this rule. On the one hand, the proposed rule does not give HHS the authority to disapprove rates. On the other hand, it does do something which is arguably even more important. It requires insurers to make public both their proposed increases and the assumptions on which those increases are based.
Under the proposed regulation, states with effective rate review systems would conduct the reviews, and if a state lacks the resources or authority to do so, HHS would step in. Meanwhile, the Department of Health will continue to make resources available to states to strengthen their rate review processes. A Florida judge heard arguments from 20 state attorney generals who joined the lawsuit challenging President Obama's health reform legislation. At issue in the law is the requirement for individuals to purchase health insurance beginning next year and for states to broaden their current Medicaid plans. Florida's Attorney General Bill McCollum led the charge.
Both the individual mandate and the question with regard to Medicaid is a violation of state sovereignty. And I think that connection was made well today in both arguments.
Judge Roger Vinson, who heard arguments, has yet to issue a ruling, but the states involved in the lawsuit appear confident that he will rule in their favor. Well, as 2010 comes to a close, we thought we'd reach out to a few of the guests we've had on the show to see what healthcare books they recommend this holiday season.
I'm going to lean a little bit toward the literary side of medicine, if that's okay. The books that I've most enjoyed this year, one is Tinkers by Paul Harding. It's a beautiful book that really gives an inside literary look at the experience of epilepsy and the experience of dying. The second book that I've enjoyed very much is Cutting for Stone by Abraham Verghese. Now, this is a novel. It's fiction. But he really gives you an inside view of medicine, in this case surgery, and how people become doctors, how they become healers, the experience of being a patient. He gives also the experience of the foreign medical graduate when they're displaced to America, how that is. And it's just a gripping and wonderful book to read.
I chose a book about health rather than healthcare. And the reason is because this is a season of giving, and one of the best gifts we can possibly give to ourselves and to each other is the gift of health. The book that's one of my favorites is called Healing with Whole Foods by Paul Pitchford. And it's not just a book that you pick up and read, but it really is a reference book. And this book describes how it is that we can add to our health in so many different ways.
So there are two books that jumped out at me in the world of health, and one is Here is a Human Being by Misha Engrist. It's a new book on that delves into the world of genetics and personal genetics. The other one that I was interested in is one that just came out. It's called The 4-Hour Body, and it's by Tim Ferriss. He's an adventurer of sorts. It's an unusual health book in the sense that it's kind of a self-help book on steroids, in fact, almost literally. Tim has spent the last couple of years doing all sorts of amazing and profound experiments into his own body, kind of demonstration of the resilience of the human body, and one that I think your listeners might appreciate in terms of kind of the audaciousness of Tim Ferriss's efforts in stretching what we think is possible with our own corpuscles.
Well, I actually think that most important things I've read recently are these two long articles which were just published online in the New England Journal of Medicine by Michael Porter on what is value and how to measure outcomes. There are a couple of print things coming out in the next few days, but these were published online a couple of weeks ago, and I think that they're very important strategy documents laying out a direction for us in the future. I also have felt that Atul Gawande's book, The Checklist Manifesto, a bestseller, there's a good reason it's a bestseller. It's very, very valuable. And the final thing I'd mention is there's a terrific book from Kaiser by Louise Liang called Connected for Health, talking about how that excellent organization has really wired their system to try to improve care.
That was Dr. Danielle Ofri, Rosemary Gibson, Thomas Goetz, and Dr. Thomas Lee, all authors themselves. This year, we interviewed Dr. Ofri about her book, Medicine in Translation, Rosemary about her book, The Treatment Trap, and Thomas about his book, The Decision Tree, Taking Control of Your Health in the New Era of Personalized Medicine. Dr. Lee's latest book is called Chaos and Organization in Healthcare. And make sure to check out some of the other books and authors from this year that we featured on the show. T.R. Reid's The Healing of America, A Global Quest for Better, Cheaper, and Fair Healthcare, and Senator Tom Daschle's new book, Getting It Done, How Obama and Congress Finally Broke the Stalemate to Make Way for Healthcare Reform. This week on Conversations on Healthcare, we're discussing quality improvement in healthcare with an organization that has been leading this movement on a global scale for decades. The Institute for Healthcare Improvement initiates many projects that engage the medical community in several facets of patient safety and quality healthcare. Let's turn now to our interview with Maureen Bisignano, who can tell us more about the quality initiatives IHI is leading. I also want to let listeners know that I'm logged onto Twitter during this interview, so if you'd like to see what I'm capturing and add some tweets of your own, you can find the discussion using hashtag CHCRadio. That's hashtag CHCRadio.
This is Conversations on Healthcare. Today we're speaking with the Institute for Healthcare Improvement's new president, Maureen Bisignano. Welcome, Maureen. Dr. Don Berwick founded IHI in the late 80s, and through the work of your entire team, the organization has made tremendous strides over the decades in safety, quality, and in fundamentally transforming care at the bedside. This has been a year of major changes for the Institute of Healthcare Improvement. Of course, Dr. Berwick was tapped by President Obama to head up the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services, and you've taken over as president at IHI, and national health reform has been launched, so it's been a very exciting year. But tell us, what's the next phase for IHI?
Well, thank you. It has been a very busy and exciting year, not only in the United States, but for healthcare in many other countries as well. I think the economic downturn several years ago prompted people to think very differently about the design and the delivery of healthcare. Healthcare reform in the U.S. and these kind of financial and quality pressures in other countries have created an incredible demand for different ways that IHI works. So in the year to come, we're going to be working in two major areas, I would say. One is we're going to be working on collaborations and bringing people together to create these new designs that will actually improve healthcare quality, improve patient satisfaction and engagement. At the same time, they lower costs and drive waste out of the system. And then the second area is to think very broadly about why the healthcare system exists. At IHI, we've called that the triple aim. And we believe that healthcare providers in the past took a fairly narrow perspective on what their role was. We're looking to expand that view of our responsibility in healthcare to the triple aim, which means, first, improving the health of the population. Second, providing great care when someone needs it. And third, controlling cost per capita.
And I've heard Dr. Berwick speak about that triple aim many times, and that's a very clear and compelling mission. You know, Maureen, it seems to me that a big part of the job of the leaders and staff at IHI must be going out into the field, visiting those hospitals, clinics, healthcare providers, and patients around the country, maybe the world, to get an idea of what's working and what's not. And when you do that, you're really looking at healthcare providers who've been trained in really many different generations of training, right? People who may be graduates within the last few years or as far back as 40 years. What do you see out there in terms of changes that impress you and leave you optimistic?
So I'll give you a few examples. I was in Jönköping, Sweden a few months back, and they are really putting the patient at the focus of their new designs. They have an imaginary patient that they call Esther. And when they get all the patients, all the healthcare providers in the room, they use this patient to understand where Esther is getting great care and where she may fall into the cracks between the hospital and the primary care system. It's been a very effective way for them to take a look at the whole health of the population. In Scotland, they've created a very ambitious, I think, national aim to become the safest country for healthcare in the world. And they're doing it. Every hospital and every physician in the country is engaged in working to understand where patients may be harmed in the system, and they're using reliability science and improvement science to drive out those causes of harm. At Bellin Health in Green Bay, Wisconsin, they've decided to work on the triple aim as a whole, and they took their employees as the starting place. As they've worked on improving the health of their employees, what they're finding is that the employee population is now becoming healthier, and as that happens, they're productive and more satisfied in their work careers, but also the cost of health care are going down.
Maureen, IHI places a great emphasis on leadership in healthcare and training healthcare providers with the skills for improvement. We've heard lots about IHI's Open School online resource center for medical students with a focus on learning about medical errors and care improvement techniques. What are some of the other ways that IHI is working to train the next generation of healthcare providers and perhaps retrain some of the current providers?
Well, it's an interesting question because I think actually the next generation is training us. Those of us who've been in the healthcare field for 25 years or more. The Open School is amazing. And when we started that, the idea came to us 3 years ago, and we opened the Open School about 2.5 years ago. But what happened was the students got in and started to study the sciences that you described, safety, reliability, and improvement. And they came to IHI, as an example, three of them called me last summer and said that they wanted to come on a month off that they had from school. One was from Wales, one was from Rhode Island, and one from California. And they moved into IHI. They started working with Dr. Atul Gawande on checklists. They actually together wrote a book called Check a Box, Save a Life. And they started teaching healthcare leaders about how to improve safety. So it really is coming full circle. But in addition, we have lots of new ways to work with people. And with the students, they've created this idea of chapters, and there are now chapters in countries all over the world where medical students and nursing students, pharmacy students, and healthcare administration students all get in the same room, and they look at a healthcare problem from all the different perspectives. It's really quite exciting to see this multi-professional approach emerging from the ground up.
And there's so much to learn from that next generation and also from what's going around the world. And speaking of around the world, I know that Dr. Berwick in the past and the whole IHI team have engaged with the National Health Service in Great Britain in an exchange of learning and ideas. And we've just been reading about the pretty radical changes to the National Health Service over there that are coming up, abolishing the primary care trusts and really turning over enormous control to the country's GPs or general practitioners. I'd be very curious to hear your thoughts on this. Is it more about cost, quality, access, or do you think this promises a greater focus on prevention, primary care, and a relationship with your primary care provider?
Well, I think you raise a great point about the relationship with the primary care provider, and I think that's the driving point. A lot remains to be seen about what the results will be from these changes. But in my optimistic days, I guess I think that healthcare designs really do need to be local. What we're finding here in the U.S. and also in the NHS in England is that innovations that are mandated from a national level and then tried to be deployed across the country take a very long time to spread. We don't have that kind of time. We've got an urgency about making care safer and driving costs out in months and years, not decades. So in that case, I think fostering local innovation is probably the best way to go.
Maureen, states and the federal government have a challenge ahead in implementing health reform, assuming the courts don't get in the way. And organizations like IHI have a role to play. How is the new law a platform for improving quality of health care and changing the delivery system and for implementing some of those local models you've talked about and see how they might translate nationally?
Well, our philosophy here at IHI is that we need three things in order for improvement to happen: will, ideas, and execution. So I think creating kind of a national learning system, in a sense, where people can talk with one another about what best practice looks like, where they can share and build new ideas, and when they can work through execution barriers together, I think may be a helpful way forward.
This is Conversations on Healthcare. Today we're speaking with the Institute for Healthcare Improvement's president, Maureen Bisignano. Maureen, there's certainly a lot of movement and interest in the meaningful use of electronic health records by healthcare providers and a big federal effort to help providers move from those old paper-based records to electronic records. And I think in the last 2 years, the pace of acceleration of adoption of records has certainly escalated. But the challenge remains the solo and small group practices. I understand IHI has created a task force around electronic health records. And can you tell us more about this? And in particular, how is IHI working with those private practices and small practices around the country?
We've got a new task force that is really addressing this interface between especially small groups and the electronic record. As we all know, this incredible potential, and I have the benefit of seeing the impact of the electronic record in the daily care visits in some places in the United States. But we also know that on average, small practices are so overwhelmed with daily work that being able to figure out how to extract and use the data in a meaningful way is going to require new skills and competencies. So our task force right now is figuring out how will we do that best. One example might be, how can we help a small practice to understand the population health outcomes? They certainly would know what a particular patient's hemoglobin A1C was, or results from a mammogram, but how do they understand the population of all of the patients that they serve? How do they understand what their health is doing as a whole, and how changes in their practice might improve the health of all of their patients as a panel?
Maureen, your reach at IHI to improve healthcare is global, so we know you have a real handle on what's going out there. And so we like to ask all of our guests, when they look around the country and the world, what do they see in terms of innovations, and who should our listeners be, conversations be keeping an eye on? I guess rather than innovations, I'm going to say, where is that combination of will, ideas, and execution out there that is building an efficient, effective, and an elegant health system in your mind?
Well, wow, I could point to places in countries all over the world. From Virginia Mason, obviously, if you've got cost pressures, I would go and look at the work that Virginia Mason is doing to utilize lean methods to redesign care. They're seeing much better clinical outcomes at much lower cost. I was recently in Appleton, Wisconsin, and visited a building that's called Encircle Health, a building that was built by independent primary care physicians and specialists. Each one of them is their own unique and freestanding entity, but they created a building so that the patient can come to one place and get care from primary care providers, get their mammogram, see a specialist, get their lab results, and get their prescriptions filled. And when they leave the building, they have one plan of care. All the independent providers got together and redesigned their own processes to integrate on behalf of the patient. So I guess a few principles emerge. One is seeing outside the box. I was having breakfast with Rosabeth Moss Cantor last week, and she said to me, it's not good enough anymore for healthcare providers to see outside the box. She said, you need to see outside the building. And I guess that's where I would push us.
And today we've been speaking with Maureen Bisignano, president of the Institute for Healthcare Improvement. Maureen, thank you so much for joining us today and for the great work you're doing.
Each week, Conversations highlights a bright idea about how to make wellness a part of our communities and everyday lives.
This week's Bright Idea highlights a university program that's creating healthcare leaders who are ready to address the changes and challenges to our current healthcare system. Arizona State University College of Nursing created the first Masters of Healthcare Innovation program in the country. The program encourages not just nursing students to apply, but students from across disciplines. And applicants are asked to come with a current or future healthcare issue that they'd like to work on during the course of study. Since the program launched in 2006, graduates are already making progress in their real-world applications. One such student, recent graduate Erin Karawa, is making a lasting impact through her senior year capstone project, the main part of the program that requires students to design and evaluate the healthcare issue that they set out to study when they were accepted. Erin worked with the Phoenix Children's Hospital Reproductive Anomalies Clinic, which takes a multidisciplinary approach to care and serves as a medical home for children with reproductive disorders. Aaron developed a plan to maximize patients' long-term quality of life and to minimize the stress that they and their families experience. She also helped the clinic adapt new data collection forms, create a bilingual patient education preference survey, get a registry approved, and even created a business plan for the clinic and a plan for improving the website. A university program that's creating out-of-the-box thinkers and a new generation of healthcare leaders in a variety of fields? Now that's a bright idea. This is Conversations on Healthcare. I'm Margaret Flinter.
And I'm Mark Maselli. Peace and health.
Conversations on Healthcare, broadcast from the campus of Wesleyan University at WESU, streaming live at WESUFM.org, and brought to you by the Community Health Center.